We're going to AP6. Karen will give us an update on the work that we've been doing at the IFRS Foundation on strategy. You'll recall in our last meeting we had quite a lengthy session and you gave us lots of feedback and comments. And so Karen's going to update us on some work that we've been doing.
End of the day. Hopefully we can keep you going.
There's dinner on offer.
Oh, later. A little carrot to keep you going. Great. Okay, yes, so you gave us some great feedback in June, so we thought we would give you a little, update on the progress on the strategy, and to hopefully go through the slides fairly quickly to give you a refresher, because it's been a long day and you've done a lot of hard work. So we asked you a number of questions in June, and hopefully you will recognize some of the feedback that you gave us, or quite a bit of the feedback that you gave us. And one of the things that you did tell us that was that there will be increased need for efficient means to access and search electronic financial information, which much of your conversation is about today. We've talked about the success in electronic reporting will look like, and you'll see that in the conditions for success. So those kind of things are throughout. So I think to keep us moving, what we would like, and the session is fairly short today, so on your travels home or once you get home, if you have some time to think about it, if we don't have enough time today, any advice that you have on the process itself that we're going through, the principles that we have in slides 5 to 11, and the data that we're gathering. If we haven't, some of you we've talked to directly, but if you've got some comments on the data that we're gathering, please feel free. All right, so then on slide 4 is the process that we have gone through or going through. It's a bit of a lengthy road. Right now we're in the process of, we've developed these principles that we'll talk about, but we're gathering some more data. And it's really, the data's around the objective itself and whether we need to be in a high, low, or medium strategy, and that's about the activities to support the level of strategic engagement. And then throughout 2020, we've got some consultations with board and trustees, and then we'll finalize the strategy into 2021. There is a broader agenda consultation, and it'll be a broad stakeholder feedback. And the execution, it doesn't, as you noticed today. We haven't stopped the work on the taxonomy. We've done a lot of work today. We continue to do our work on the taxonomy. But then in 2021, when we finalize the taxonomy strategy, the execution of that strategy through over the next five years to 2026. Now, in developing the principles for the taxonomy strategy, one of the things that we've done, always in strategy, is look at the IFRS Foundation's mission and what is that mission and that the strategy should cascade from that. We looked then at what is our vision for global electronic reporting, and that's globally, not just our vision. Then what would be the conditions for success for global electronic reporting? Then what would the Foundation's role be in a global electronic reporting? And then what would our objective be in that? And what would our activities be to support that objective? So it was really a cascade from the mission down to the actual activities to support that objective. So then, as we know, our mission is to develop IFRS standards that bring transparency, accountability, and efficiency to financial markets around the world. And we also, much of our conversation today, is about technology, and that investors are increasingly consuming financial reports. So, that are prepared in accordance with IFRS and obviously with US. So we think that this has the potential to further our mission by increasing economic efficiency of the global markets. But that's really in that all investors would have to have access to all aspects of financial reporting for all companies. So that's that piece at the beginning when you talked about, having access and searchability of financial reports. It's covering that. And then here's where that conditions of success that we talked about in the brainstorming in June comes into play. It's really consistent global adoption. So you've talked about some areas not having extensions, some having extensions, different, some have footnotes, some don't, talking about that consistent global adoption and application, including single set of financial reporting standards for their electronic. Quality electronic data, we talk about that a lot in this room. Attributes of the elements correctly signed, accuracy of tagging, we've talked about that today. Accessibility of electronic data, and that's on multiple levels. That's the location. It's also user-friendly. Can the preparers access? Can the investors access? Then there's the stakeholder buy-in, and that's a big piece. The stakeholder buy-in and the vision for global electronic reporting. Do the stakeholders all have the same vision? And this, as I said, was at the higher level. So then, as we think about it, the foundation doesn't have control over many of these aspects. And the market players have taken steps to manage some of these conditions. So what are the unique attributes that the foundation has? And those, that was one of the questions we talked to you about in June. And the foundation does have specialized accounting knowledge. It is a trusted organization because of the processes it goes through. It seeks feedback from many participants before it issues any thought process. It has a public interest focus versus a profit focus. And it has a international network to influence. Those were its the unique values that we talked about in June. So then we come to the objective in that environment of a global electronic reporting. What would the foundation's objective be? And remembering that it has to cascade from the mission. So we look at it and said our objective would be to facilitate the electronic consumption of financial reports prepared in accordance with IFRS. That's the foundation's area. So then it is what activities do we take on to achieve that objective? Now, in this list is a list that's a full portfolio. And it has, the maintenance and development, it has what the board and staff could do, it has what education and influence we could do. It also has the monitoring of the electronic consumption and technological developments. So, in maintenance development, there's always the research and outreach to improve taxonomy. But as many times has been said today, the taxonomy is a reflection of the IFRS standards, and that can't be forgotten. In the board and staff processes, considering implications of electronic reporting when setting standards, I think some of the conversations around the unusual items today, the totals and some of the others that helped emphasize, some of the things that could happen. The use of taxonomy in evidence-based standard setting. Those have come back and forth of expanding the thought process. The education and influence, that's been mentioned a number of times, the preparers, the investors on benefits of electronic reporting, and all the parties that are part of that ecosystem in the their role in improving the data. And then, as they say, that monitoring, what are the developments? How easy is it? How user-friendly? We talked about one of the guides. What are the other people? What are the other tools that are coming into play to help either the users access the data or the preparers in their journey? And there's one more element in these activities to reach our objectives is the risk. There's this risk that the technology itself doesn't progress enough to help either the users access this data or that the preparers never do buy in. They always think this is a compliance exercise, and they never see the benefit. So they don't put the effort into it to make it a good quality product. Or, and this might make everyone's day, if the technology progressed to the point that we didn't need taxonomies and that it happened, I'll say magically, but there's that idea that technology had progressed there. Or that we have there's this other idea, if there's a poor global adoption and everyone loses support for electronic reporting, it's always a risk. And then there is the lack of skilled resources. We know that that is a challenge, having technology literacy and accounting literacy together can be a bit of a needle in a haystack at times. So looking for those to accomplish some of the goals and objectives that we're trying to achieve. Getting to what our current work is in the data gathering. This was to try and give you a visual. Maybe it looks a bit clunky. When I talked about, you know, what's low, medium, high for us, because we have those principles laid out. And if you recognize that there's the activities down the side, the maintenance and development, the board and staff's processes, the education and influence, and then the monitoring, the electronic consumption and technology at the bottom, and across the top, the support in a low engagement, you have the support for those who adopt the I4S taxonomy. Those who are in it, we would continue to support them. And that's in those, there's a bit of color coordination throughout this that, you know, we continue to support with the updates and amendments to the taxonomy for amendments of the I4S and the I4S standards. We'd still be using the taxonomy to inform standard setting to better meet investors' needs. And try to consider implications of electronic reporting and standard setting. And then the medium level support stakeholder needs within control, within a control. That's that medium level. So you can see, and then as you go to the support for full electronic reporting vision, that's a high level, is really the big difference there is that proactive influence, the global adoption accessibility. It's really going out and trying to influence other jurisdictions and more the heavy education on things like you've talked about today, the regulators, and really putting a lot of resources towards that. Still within the bounds of what the foundation is, its scope is. But just gives you a bit of the flavor of the two ends of, and as we say, that color coding has room to shift. That was a, you know, the beginning draft. So the data that we've been looking at, what kind of information have we been looking at to give us a sense of where, what's our starting point? Like, where's the world at? So we looked at the selected jurisdictions. We picked some jurisdictions to look at. And we also looked at the regulatory support, and we looked at investors and what their feedback is and are continuing to do it. So in the jurisdictions, we looked at who had mandatory requirements to do the XBRL I4S taxonomy filings, who was in a voluntary tagging world, who was using the I4S taxonomy as it is and who had created proprietary taxonomies, who had them publicly available, once the tagged statements were done, were they publicly available for investors to access, who had them so that they were easy to access, or once they were tagged, they weren't available. Regulatory support, what are the motivations in the regulatory support? Was it to attract investment into the area, or was it for accountability? Those kind of things. And the investor feedback, you know, what will make tag data more useful? Did it change how the investors and analysts worked since some of the tag data had come online, and how had it changed? So those were some of the kind of things that we're starting to gather and looking at. It helps give us a starting point for considering the strategic. I mean, we've had some of that data already, but we're trying to be a bit more specific and gather some more. So to give you an example, and this is completely hypothetical, keep stressing, this fact pattern or scenario, so that you might see how it might affect what we think of the level of engagement. So we took an example that we found that there was high interest globally. There's high interest in supporting a requirement to adopt I4S, if that was the findings. But there were low levels of mandatory use. And then we found also that, let's say we found that the investors were still manually populating all their models and that there was a low level of awareness. Then we go to this other side and say, well, what would that mean from a strategic engagement perspective? So it's great that the high global interest is there, because that's that hard, really difficult perspective when we said the conditions of success of having stakeholder buy-in. Is it indicates that we might have stakeholder buy-in, and it's much easier to get the rock moving if you've got rolling, if you've got buy-in. But it probably indicates you've got a lot of investor or a lot of education to do to get that consistent global adoption happening, which was one of the other conditions of success. Then the other is that the continued manual consumption by the investors, you're probably going to have to go into some research and some education. What are the things that would help to get them to move over, that kind of thing. So education and influence is one of the categories of activities that you can employ, we feel, in that strategy. So that's to try and give you a sense of, you know, why we're collecting the data, what are the things that might influence along that pendulum of the thing. So five minutes to give you, you know, observations of the overall, that gives you a view of the strategy overall. So observations, comments on that.
So,
yes.
Quite interesting. Let me just find one of your mission. Very good. And I'm going to walk you through on that one. The mission says all investor, all aspect of financial reporting, and all companies. And then you have constraint on, you know, the slide 11, lack of resources and so on and so forth. And to be honest with you, even taxonomy is a huge undertaking and responsibility. So here is a far-fetched idea. Whoever, and there where the regulator comes, if they consume IFRS taxonomy, obviously they charge of each filers. Portion of that fee should be reimbursed to IFRS. Because right now, and that's one of the probably awareness, I think, issue, because you highlighted there that not a lot of people are aware of IFRS taxonomy, is free. So that would be probably one of the interesting things. So, for example, SEC filer, foreign filers, SEC can, you know, the right now on fees using IFRS taxonomy, they should recompensate whatever the portion agreed to IFRS foundations. And then it will become much more awareness, and because now you have to pay something. And that will also help you to fund your activity and to achieve that, you know, the vision you have, all investor, all finances driven, all countries.
So you take that as a vote of confidence that you're a supporter of the vision. That's good.
John.
I just had one very specific thing actually on this slide, I think. The next slide, which talks about the risk. Well, this is a set of risks. It seems to me there's an additional risk, which you do reference, which is the tendency within reporting generally, but we also see this in XBRL, for silos to get created. So there is certainly a risk that if the level of intensity with which the foundation applies itself in this field is not sufficient to meet certain basic needs around the world, there will be silos of my version of the IFRS taxonomy, impairing comparability, impairing that very admirable goal that you described at the beginning. And part of that is education, part of that is potentially IP, and, you know, I don't think historically you've necessarily been willing to take on certain environments which have said, well, we'll create our own IFRS taxonomy. Do you really want them to do that? Does that actually help that mission? So I think this is a very interesting approach. I think it's very useful. I think there's a lot to discuss. But that was just the one point that I wanted to raise, which look at the top 10 policy objectives of almost every government in the world at the moment, and they really, you know, one of the top five is improvements to the manner in which those economies are data driven, and that requires, amongst other things, structured data in this field. So there's lots of water to go under the bridge. The change we've seen is extremely slow and extremely hard to bring about because it's a conservative field. And there's lots of education to do, but that doesn't take away from this global shift at present. Which means that some stakeholders come to this question in a very uninformed fashion.
So you, do you see it as an opportunity or?
It's a both.
Okay.
It's really a simple question from slide 13. And maybe we're misunderstanding the color coding, but we're curious why on the board and staff processes, process level, the taxonomy itself wasn't a red, given the cost, the investment, all of what that takes to actually you guys own the taxonomy itself, and notwithstanding all the other concerns about, I'm not saying offshore it somewhere else, or, you know, offload it somewhere else, but in terms of, you know, helping people understand who might not be as informed about what all you do and how much it takes to do it, sort of, again, maybe misunderstanding why that's light blue.
So you're asking, Suzanne, that with the taxonomy itself takes a lot of effort, and so you would equate that with a high involvement strategy.
I would.
Yeah.
I would. And again, maybe I'm misunderstanding how you got to blue, and it's not. We're not thinking about it correctly. So
I think that the way I'd respond to that would be if we were starting from scratch and we didn't have a taxonomy, then yes, certainly that would be right in the red box.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we do have a taxonomy already there. It covers a lot of what we need to do, and so actually, the ongoing maintenance of it is probably in the region of low. Not to underestimate the amount of work that's involved,
right.
But continuing with it, it seems to me to fall into the low strategy. If we're starting fresh, yeah, you're quite right. That would be high.
Okay.
And it's that this red is that full electronic reporting vision.
Okay.
Is the
right,
and hence the proactively influence global adoption. Can you start to see how it takes all so much education and influence?
We might. I'm wondering if the words might be a little bit confusing, because I think part of what this was trying to convey is that just as the staff do their standard setting work, we need evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the best place to get the evidence? Existing financial reports. Let's extract that electronically using tools that use the taxonomy. That's all we're saying.
Okay.
So I think maybe we might need to
ask
the words a little bit.
Yeah, I know it's helpful to have the questions. Because you won't be the only one that sees it that way.
Yeah, thanks. So I think just maybe three areas which said maybe just as a item to think about it. The first area is really the topic speed. So we see in the market that now we have a lot of projects coming, changing from a monthly to a daily perspective. So real time is something which is definitely coming, obviously. And the question is, of course, how this will then be reflected, because as you say, this is like I see this more like a strategic vision, what you want to see in the future, and that would be one area where we see definitely a big challenge as a preparer, as investors demanding this massively, and all our internal process, they will change and structure it into a daily reporting, and even then go probably then into real-time reporting, yeah, which is really a massive, massive step. This is just one topic. Yeah. The second topic, we know that this is all about financial reporting. However, what we see, of course, in the market is that the investor is very much interested in non-financial reporting information. And especially here in Europe, for example, now we had the discussion about the sustainability taxonomy. And we would see as the ISB is a cornerstone in taxonomy development or the foundation. So once again, the question is, of course, is there a kind of extension of the work at least possible? Because as at the end, we as a preparer probably will need to tag that. So this is just something, I know it's highly controversial, but just as a topic which we are very much dependent. And the third and last one, what we see is currently, and that's some like projects like Anna Credit, it all goes more to raw data and more detailed. So the journey goes from aggregation to providing more
more data on very granular level. And of course, then the question, and that's also something you don't, I think this is quite probable, then this will be aggregated and will be compared to your financials in one way. And the question is, of course, is there something idea to also have a kind of taxonomy for data or data dictionary? I know this is also not actually part of your core mission, but at least we as a preparer, we of course we see it as a long-term challenge, as we have now to provide millions of transactional data to regulators, but at the same time, of course, provide aggregated data to I would say these are the kind of three areas or topics where we would say this is maybe it's one way to include it in this strategy. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
I would also build on what Dirk said, especially the last point on the granular data. But I wanted to highlight it from slightly different perspective. I think increasingly for us here at the ITCG and also for the IFRSs, it will be important to distinguish between we are preparing our developments towards more machine consumption or more towards human consumption, the machine consumption involving all the algorithms. Here we have certain evidence, as you were calling, of use of the IFRS data, for instance, with algorithms such as search algorithms. One of the vendors presenting at one of the XBL conferences was showing the voice command of searching and querying IFRS type of data. There are examples of use of machine learning algorithms to basically query and observe the data. The Danish Business Authority comes to mind here. So we may, if the core mission is to bring transparency to the financial markets, machines are better in checking things, much better than humans on the massive scale of data, but humans complement that with the very particular things which have not been programmed by the algorithms to distinguish, so some exceptions and some unusual cases. Currently, we have focused, for instance, with the materials and so on, for to be targeted more towards humans. So the guidance and everything that we provide is more towards humans. We actually assume that the data, the IFRS data that will be created based on the taxonomy, will be consumed by algorithms. But as IFRS Foundation, I don't think we have entered into any space or discussion with the vendors who do those algorithms or provide this kind of software. Would it make sense to include in a vision something like reaching out and engaging in conversation with those stakeholders, those counterparts who push a little bit the envelope here and try to embrace the data in its machine nature and try to provide us with interfaces that humans can interact with the machine algorithms? Some time ago, there was the notion of the IFRS taxonomy annual convention. That was one venue for this kind of interaction where applications were possible to be presented and demoed to see how the data could be used in the future. I don't think that we have currently any kind of focused way of engaging with those more innovative stakeholders. So maybe that would be one consideration for the future, to think about this human and also the machine aspect of the data.
So, you know, maybe this is being considered somewhere else, and I appreciate why that might be. But Ashnak's comment about, you know, the funding from the regulators, and I imagine the challenge around that. But the thing that strikes me as missing here is really talking about the funding of resources, which seems to be pretty fundamental to getting anything done going forward. Right. Now again, maybe that's in another plan somewhere else, and I understand that. But it underpins everything here. I mean, I would be surprised if you told me that resources was not an issue here. I would be surprised if you told me that getting more resources was not an issue here. Right? That's my impression is
more resources would be helpful, right? So the plan doesn't really speak. It talks about lack of skilled resources, but that's really always key here, and that's kind of the elephant in the room for so much of what we want to do. So maybe some time should be spent thinking about how to tackle that.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point that weighs very heavily on our minds. And maybe a little bit more context around this. The board is required every 5 years to go out and do an agenda consultation so that stakeholders can help inform the board's priorities. And so this is one piece that's going to flow into our agenda consultation, where we'll ask our stakeholders, given we have a certain amount of capacity, and not just us, but externally our stakeholders have limited capacity, how would you recommend that we prioritize our activities? We have standard setting, we have consistent application, we have the taxonomy, we have a number of other things that the board does. And so the first question for them is exactly what Karen was talking about. With respect to the taxonomy, high, medium, or low, recognizing that if you want high, then there's a trade-off. Mm-hmm. Something else is going to have to shift. And then that would then funnel into the subsequent activities. So it's sort of being picked up, but as you were saying, in a different
right,
spot.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent, though, there is an additional community that you can leverage here. That, I mean, you still want to play in the same house, but there's a bigger house that there are other houses, other communities. This metaphor could follow up really bad. There's other communities you can bring in that maybe haven't been at the table before that could help.
And, just for my benefit, what's an example of what you're
thinking
about?
Well, an example of that, for us, external reporting and data aggregators were never a part of our space, mm-hmm. right? And when we started with XBarrel and electronic reporting, they are now very much at the table.
I see.
Right, so that's an example.
Actually, adding to, just sorry for interrupting quickly, but adding to Louis' comments, some of these things, if I look at these boxes over there, proactively influence, monitor and update, educational materials, some of these boxes could be gathered in considering the low resources into very focused activities, like this forum is one example. The other example could be this, for instance, annual convention or a conference which reaches out and invites a broader group to communicate and share these feedback. So we don't need to have it every month, but once a year to get where the broad group of stakeholders is, for instance, in adoption of these more innovative solutions or things. I think it would be particularly relevant if you think about what it does for an adoption from an adoption standpoint to have an interface, a voice command interface. Would you like to extend this element? And you have a choice of three elements. Okay, which one do you choose? If you choose this one, and so on. This completely changes the game from, oh, I need to provide the guidance to this taxonomy because there's like 500 elements that I can choose, and I need to explain what are the implications of choosing each of them. Well, that's a great burden on resources. That's a lot of work to provide all that explanation. If someone actually implements an algorithm to guide you by voice to do that, the path is shortened enormously. That's something that I would say you need to rely on the community, because obviously with limited resources, it would be impossible to target all of that. But the community guided appropriately may actually lead towards that.
Just briefly, I guess one stakeholder that hasn't been mentioned and which perhaps unsurprisingly comes to my mind is the role of assurance providers. And I know where that will go, and I'm not sure there's a lot of clarity on the role of assurance providers, but when we hear about tagging errors and these kind of things, I can see that a role of some description could emerge, whether that be in the accounting world or the technology world or wherever it might be. But I think it's one to monitor and to think about how that kind of plays into ultimately producing high quality financial information in electronic form.
Wow.
Yeah.
So very briefly then, so firstly, in sort of relating to one of the things up on the screen around that, which is on data quality, which of course has been a hot topic in our domain for many years now, and often because of how it's connected to either the use or the adoption of data and sort of voluntary filing. But I've often seen that the target around that is not necessarily to try head-on to solve the data quality issue, because you're not the person preparing the data, but to actually provide data quality transparency should be that aim, and then leave the responsibility for the actual data quality to the regulators, to the auditors, to the system to work as a whole. If there's transparency on data quality, then an analyst and investor can make an informed choice. They have to evaluate that data quality themselves. It gets a little bit tricky, is my view of that data quality right.
How do you see us as an organisation providing that transparency?
Now, that's a very good question. One that I have no doubt that Peter Piers and I have been tackling very recently in context of what's going on in Europe.
Provide what kind of transparency?
Transparency in terms of what is the quality of the data, for what purposes can it be relied upon, are there obvious errors in terms of signage or inconsistencies between the human presentation as you described today and the machine readable presentation. To what extent does that require a skilled accounting practitioner to make an assessment? Many of those things perhaps require the wide application of technology. That's a good question. It's one that the auditing profession is grappling with at the moment.
Well, with transparency, we also have other examples, like the European Commission's work on this EFTG, this European Financial Transparency Gateway, which is one aspect of providing transparency, making the data available. So the availability of data is just one aspect of that. The guidance on what the quality of data rules should be is another aspect of that. So when we sort of like disaggregate the transparency goal into some key results that we would like to achieve. The key result is, for instance, we would like to achieve at least 90% of the reports to meet 90% threshold of the business rules included in the taxonomy, valid, right? So that's one of the rules that can be set as a key result of that objective of transparency being embodied. The other one is availability of reports and so on. So I think that we can disaggregate those these bigger blocks, which are relatively undefined, into more clear objectives and the key results, the measures we would like to achieve.
Sorry, we're sort of slightly on a tangent then. So as an accounting standard set, there's often a lot of focus and in ways at a national and international level on reducing the burden of compliance, reducing the burden of actually applying, of going through change and so forth. And indeed, as we look at the digitization of data, often, and I remember from reviewing the ECFL standards all the way back in 2003, there was around driving efficiencies through digitization, increasing the timeliness of data and those sorts of things. And we mustn't lose sight of those ambitions whilst also doing a little bit of reality check and say, well, talk about today about some of the sample sets of data for foreign private issuers to the US SEC. Do those filers believe that they have driven efficiencies and helped them with a sort of the timeliness and understanding of what they're reporting? I doubt, actually, if we were to be wholly honest. Have other programs that have prepared expert taxonomists, often with an IFRS base, felt that they've driven some degrees of efficiencies in any aspects of the markets in which they which they regulate or monitor? I think that they have, although it's not universal across the expert domain. So talking to what John Turner was mentioning earlier around silos, we must recognise, as we have around this table today, there's a huge cost and resource and time required to develop a taxonomy. So if a local, national, often an accounting standard setter, has taken the decision to develop their own sort of major extension to an IFRS taxonomy or their own IFRS taxonomy, there are real drivers behind doing that, that they have said unofficially that the IFRS taxonomy wasn't fit for their purposes and that we're not meeting their needs. That may have been some time ago. Those drivers may no longer exist in some cases as we've made updates as a program. But it's not something just to reflect on. It's actually a challenge that we need to solve. And so I would see that as part of our strategic programme to take ownership of and recognise it as a problem. The and that's kind of the three areas that I wanted to touch on.
Okay. Ashok.
Ashok, I think this is the last comment for the day.
From you.
One of the areas I think we're not addressing is awareness of educational institute and the teaching of and learning about, you know, the ex-barrel taxonomy. I'll give you an example, kind of the analogy. Long ago, when I done my CPA exam, IFRS was in existence. But in CPA exam, like a chartered accountancy in US, similar sort of thing, nothing was IFRS. But last 5 years, every CPA exams and every student or every candidate, they have to learn about IFRS, even though US has not adopted. And so that's one of the thing I think. I just wonder how many educational institute right now in the world who adopted, you know, the IFRS really know about IFRS taxonomy. I think that's one of the area I think we should do something on that one. And that will probably bring the, what Peter, kind of things. A lot of so-called assurance giver, I see them every day, but they give assurance, but they have really, they need so much education on taxonomy.
What I'm hearing around the room suggests to me at some point a follow-on session, because what I'm hearing are a lot of detailed activities that sort of fall under these boxes. And I think once we get a better sense of where we end up strategically, low, medium, or high, we absolutely need to come back to you and try to think through what are these detailed things that, that we can be doing. There's just some really great ideas here.
Okay, we've got two more comments. We're going to go to Anna and then Suzanne and then online.
All right, thank you. I have 2 points relating to looking at your slide. So first point is that I see nothing, maybe it's just me, but I don't see anything in terms of education of users. So yes, this ties in with the idea of educating the preparers, of course, like if we're talking about accounting institutes, that's mainly the preparers and assurance providers. I think there's also some work to be done with the users in turn, and because if this entire exercise of adopting taxonomy ends up being providing cheaper data for the data aggregators, maybe we're going to be can get an increase in the cost for preparers a lot, whilst not necessarily increasing the accessibility. Because I think the big advantage of preparers doing data creation themselves rather than going through the data aggregators to create that electronic version of the data is that we make that data freely accessible. But users need to know how to do that. So I would suggest that that's an activity that maybe doesn't even belong to the medium, possibly even to the high level priorities. And this ties in with another point I had about global adoption. And I just wonder whether this idea of global adoption doesn't have a qualitative connotation to it that we may want to reflect on, meaning, is it the same thing whether global adoption of the IFRS taxonomy involves regulators in requiring only tagging of the primaries, mm-hmm. or block tagging of the notes, or no extensions, or whatnot? Maybe a qualitative dimension of what do you mean by global adoption and where is the ultimate aim? Where will you see the IFRS taxonomy really providing full-scale benefits to all the stakeholders, including, most importantly, in my view, the users, be reached? What are the connotations that the global adoption need to deliver on?
Really quick. So I had this thought, and maybe it's turning that slide into the slide I thought it was, mm-hmm. Which is something like a heat map of that goes with this, that is the consumption of your use of resources to achieve each of these things. And so whether it's cost, whether it's staff time, like what is the heat map of how much time is spent for each of these boxes and how much investment currently? And then I imagine that would shift as you move along that continuum. And then that helps inform perhaps this other discussion we could have, which is how can the community help? You know, if you've got this sort of bright red in terms of the heat map of what it takes or would take to do this, and, you know, how can we help, I guess.
I'm going to ask Bin La and Lou if they have any comments at this point. We've been looking at slide 13, but Bin La, if you're still awake, do you have any comments?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you're amazing. You're amazing, man.
It's early Friday morning, so I think I would see some sunlight, but it's only summertime.
Sunlight and smoke.
Yes, I do have just, I try to be quick in terms of one point about the improvement of local adoption. I mean, as regulator, when we spoke to different companies without mandating, they mentioned that they have very little incentive to prepare electronic reporting. One of the issues they have is also there's no demand from their investor or analyst. But when we come and talk to the analyst, they say that there's no data available, so that's why they never think about developing their model to consume structured financial information. So we're facing kind of a chicken and egg situation here. So I think breaking that circle is very important for improving the adoption. We think that part of that can be, you know, how to increase the demand of structured financial information from analysts and from generally user financial reports. So that's all I have.
Thank you for those comments, and they're quite substantial and germane. Right. Lou, are you online?
Yes.
Would you like to comment, Lou?
Slide 13 is very interesting. I feel that the low and the medium, the blue and the green, at the top are requirements of the foundation. I think the high, it's a beautiful place to get to. It's a harder place to get to. But the main thing to remember is that the foundation's in a unique position in that they're the trusted organization that has public interest. Everybody else doing this, not everybody, but most others doing this, have a special interest, which is monetary. And there's a lot of trust in the foundation. So I think that's required of the foundation. The high, my view in that, to get to that red box on the bottom right, it is partially out of control of the foundation. But my thoughts and view is take a shot. If you fail in doing that, so what? I think that's okay. Nothing wrong with failing to get to that high spot, even though knowing that it's partially out of control of the foundation to get there. There's many external factors, but failing is okay, and I think the blue and the green are the are requirements. That's my view. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Lou, it's Karen. That's isn't that in tech what they call the moonshot? The red?
I guess so. Yeah, but it's a beautiful place if it can be achieved. I mean, it can be achieved, possibly. It's where I think everybody's strategic, well, not everybody's, but strategic spot would be.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Lou.
It's also a state of mind, right? You know, it's how you think about where you're trying to get. And if you own it, if you believe it, and then in many respects you own it. And you may not be able to control it, but you gotta believe it.
You know that they will come.
We're going to bring this session to an end. Neely, do you have any concluding comments you want to make on this?
No, very, very insightful feedback. It's given us a lot to think about. Thank you for that.
Okay. I have to just consult with my advisor here on my right. It is 5:30. It's been a very long day, and people have worked extremely hard. We did a survey, where we asked you to make comments for us on effectiveness. Now, we do have a few slides. did put material together, but I'm just aware that it's already 5:30 and so forth. What do you want to do on this, Rachel?
I think everybody's had a very long day, so I think if anybody has anything in particular that they wanted to raise in terms of the effectiveness of the group and the feedback, very happy to hear it. If you would like to do that offline in terms of sending in emails, or if you haven't actually completed the survey, if you could complete the survey, that would be enormously helpful to us. But unless anybody has anything particularly burning that they would like to comment on now, I suggest we drop the session.
Okay, so but before we do that, it's just we would
Safe travels, Anna.
Bye-bye, Anna. Thank you so much.
We
would need to call this, if we're going to talk about this survey at all, we have the end of the public session. So if we do have any people here that are not members of the committee or staff, we need to ask them to leave.